Blog Talk Radio.
And Larson's Political Economy is back on the air. The home to liberty and the fight against tyranny everywhere. Thank you for joining us. This is Sven Larson coming to you again from Larson's Political Economy. I have a blog for those of you who want to read my daily articles. Just Google Larson's Political Economy and you will find it. There will also be a link under this show once it goes into archive. Larson's Political Economy is a unique show where we talk about the issues that are not discussed in the daily grinds of the online conversation. You will not find us participating in social media. The issues we talk about are bigger and far more important than you can fit into a tweet. One of the things that we talk about here is the theory and practice of liberty versus the theory of practice of tyranny. And the show today is titled, Who Benefits from the Welfare State Anyway? We're going to take a step back from that question because something came up this week that I think is very important to talk about in this context. But this is the type of questions that we discuss here. We do not sit down and look at things you can cover in a couple of minutes or in a punchline or a talking point. This is educational radio. This is where we discern, we analyze, and we elevate the human awareness and the human existence to a higher level. That is the ambition with this show. If you are interested in tweeting, you will not find this show interesting, but if you are interested in learning and growing and getting new insights into the fundamental values and conditions of our society, the things that define our future, this is your show. One of the things that has risen to importance and to prominence in here in America in just the last year, actually, even, is the resurrection of socialism and of ideas that government can and should shape society and shape our lives in both a macro and a micro context. And this resurrection of socialism is disturbing to someone like me who was there when the Soviet Union fell. Literally not in the Soviet Union, of course, but I was there. I lived in Europe at that time. I traveled Eastern Europe the year before the wall fell. I saw socialism in practice. I grew up in Sweden. I've seen the so-called soft version of socialism. I endured it. I hated it. I left it. And when the wall fell in 1988, there were many of us who thought, this is never going to happen again. Some people were much smarter than that. President Reagan, for example, warned that freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. Freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. What did he mean by that? He meant that every generation has to conquer and reconquer the meaning of living in and preserving and evolving a free society. President Reagan knew that if there was just one generation that would grow up with the inadequate understanding of freedom, with complacency toward tyranny, then freedom would be doomed. President Reagan also knew that America was the last vestige when it came to freedom. People from all over the world have come to this country, me included, because this is indeed home to liberty. But if we lose that here in America, Reagan knew, there would be nowhere else to go. If freedom falls here in the United States of America, we have nowhere else to go. That is why I've started this show, because I want to make my contribution. I want to pull my part of the load, not only in defending the freedom we have, but in educating and bringing the conversation forward as to how we can grow freedom, how we can restore the foundations of liberty in this country, defend them, and make sure that they are never put in jeopardy again the way they are now. Because I believe we are at a crossroads as a country. We are at a crossroads where we could easily go over the edge and become just another socialist country. Hard socialism, as in Cuba, or soft socialism, as in Venezuela, Sweden, most of Europe. A lot of people laugh when I say that, socialism in Europe. Europe is wonderful. No, it's not. I grew up in socialism, the soft version. I'm going to take another show where I will talk in detail about what socialism really means. But for those of you who want to know the Swedish version of socialism, there is a very good book. It is called The New Totalitarians. The New Totalitarians. It was written by a British journalist in 1973. His name is Roland Huntford. Google that book. It is available as a PDF online. If you read that book, you will learn what soft socialism really means. You will understand the country I came from. I also wrote a book called The Rise of Big Government, How Egalitarianism Conquered America. It came out last winter on Routledge. You can Google Larson, The Rise of Big Government. You will find it. In that book, I explain how the totalitarian ideas that are embedded in the Swedish welfare state were brought over here to America and embedded in what we called the war on poverty. That is not to say that the war on poverty is totalitarian in intent. It is not. It was a benevolent way to improve people's lives here in America. Benevolent effort. But its design is not benevolent. And I will take more time in the future with this show to explain why. What I wanted to talk about today is a more urgent issue when it comes to understanding how socialism is resurrecting itself in our time here in the 21st century, when we thought we would all be libertarians, quote unquote. Someone once said that. That has not happened, unfortunately. But why is socialism coming back, and what's its form? Well, we, of course, have the democratic socialists that are making headway in the Democrat Party. We've seen candidates for Congress. There's a man running for governor in Florida who is also a democratic socialist. I'm sure they're all very nice people. And I understand that Gollum, who's running in Florida as a Democrat candidate for governor, was mayor of Tallahassee before. I'm sure he's a capable man. But being a democratic socialist literally means that you are advancing an idea that is totalitarian by construction, by intent. You may not have the intent of being a totalitarian, but the ideas you're purporting have been designed with totalitarianism in mind. And why is that? Well, totalitarianism is embedded in socialism in the form of it's how it constructs the role of government in society, in the role it gives to government. You cannot have individual freedom and socialism at the same time. Let me give you an example of where we come from when we reach the conclusion, those of us who do reach the conclusion that socialism is totalitarian. Let me give an example of that. On August 14, the United Nations published a report called Governance of Economic Transition. This document is part of the UN's fight to turn around, to stop what they believe is climate change, global warming. If you accept the premise that there is something called man-made global warming, then that's fine. I don't. I think there is plenty of evidence to the contrary. For example, even the NASA has admitted that there is no destruction or diminishing of the polar ice caps. The proponents of global warming told us they would be gone by 2013. Of course, that isn't even close to happening. There's plenty of evidence that the predictions of global warming have not materialized. So I do not believe that we are facing a quote-unquote climate change. So with that premise in mind, I started reading this report that the UN put out called Governance of Economic Transition. Now, what is this report? Well, it sounds very technical and academic and sophisticated when you start reading it. It's supposed to provide an economic pathway to an environmentally sustainable society. Now, don't get me wrong. I love preserving the environment. I think it's great how we do such a good job here in America compared to Sweden, where I lived before. Our streets are comparatively clean. You drive down the highways, they are clean compared to what you see in Europe. We do a good job with a lot of things here in this country, recycling even. And even in the macro sense, of course, I don't want to pollute the environment any more than anybody else, but I do not believe we have global warming going on. Doesn't mean I don't like clean environments. I do. Clean water, clean air, we're all for that. That's not the issue. But the issue is instead that some people are using this idea of global warming to advance totalitarian economic ideas, such as this report, Governance of Economic Transition from the UN. In it, they say that in order to save the planet from global warming, we need to create a central planning system for the entire global economy. And instead of just focusing on the environment, this report, which you can find online, it's readily available. In this report, they not only talk about environmental problems, which would be fair if they did, because that is a fair conversation to have. But they throw in things like, here's what they say. Societies are witnessing rising inequality, rising unemployment, slow economic growth, rising debt levels, and governments without workable tools for managing their economies. This is a quote from page 2 in that report. So what the United Nations is saying here is that when we talk about environmental issues, we necessarily have to bring up completely unrelated issues, such as perceived economic inequality. I do not accept the term, but let's use it for now. Inequalities, differences in economic standard of living between countries, between individuals in countries. They bring up that. What does that have to do with the environment? Nothing. They bring up unemployment. Yes, there is high unemployment in Europe. We don't have much of an unemployment problem left here in America right now, but they do in Europe. Slow economic growth. Yes, I wrote an entire book about why we have slow growth. It's called Industrial Poverty. And there I show how big government is actually the cause of slow growth in Europe. And I'm predicting that the same thing is going to happen here in America once we grow governments beyond a certain point. But slow growth has nothing to do with the environmental issues that this report is supposed to talk about. So the United Nations goes on to talk about rising debt levels. That also does not have anything to do with the environment. Why do they bring all these things together? Well, the reason, of course, is that their agenda is not to save the environment. It's not about that. The report, this report, which is written, by the way, by a group of Finnish scholars, Finnish academics, is actually a report about how to create central planning at a global level. central economic planning. They're using the environmental issue as a door opener, a way to scare people into accepting the idea of central economic planning. And then they go over to, once they've opened the door by talking about that, the United Nations report, this UN report, gets to the real issue, which is central economic planning. And they point to all these things like inequality, unemployment, growth, and debt as the real economic issues that they want to target. But it doesn't stop there. I too agree that unemployment and growth are things we need to fight. But the best way to fight it is to preserve and nurture and participate in free market capitalism. It is the only system that can solve problems of unemployment and growth and give everybody the opportunity to become as wealthy as they possibly can. So what is the real purpose behind this UN report? Well, it is, of course, what they say toward the end of the meaning of the sentence that I quoted you. The meaning of that sentence is toward the end. They say governments are left without workable tools to manage their economies. Well, what business is it of government to manage the economy in the first place? This is a premise, an assumption that this UN report builds upon. They assume that it is the role of government to somehow govern, manage, rule the economy. That has nothing. There's nothing in credible economic research that shows that government can make anything but a negative contribution beyond its minimal size. There is a minimal government that we need, but beyond that, there is no role for government in managing the economy. Yet that is precisely what this UN report says. Now, why is this UN report important? Of course, it was published in August 14. Which is just over a month ago. That alone makes it relevant. But it's also relevant because when the UN publishes research like this, they try to set the agenda for the policy conversation all over the world, especially in the developed world, the industrialized world, countries like here in America, of course. And when the United Nations so blatantly comes out and says that the role of government is to manage the economy, then the message in that and in the rest of the report should be taken very seriously. Because what they're trying to do is set the agenda for a conversation about advancing central economic planning. Central economic planning. Now, what does that mean? Well, if we continue to read this report, we find that there are two things especially that stand out that they say we need to do. And we're going beyond the cursory discussion that they have about the environment. In fact, it's not even a big part of their report, but they pretend to make that their main cause. But if we dig into this report, what we find is that the United Nations thinks that we should have something called a universal job guarantee. I'll take that again. The United Nations, in this report that I just quoted for you, says that we should have a universal job guarantee. What does that mean? And why do they propose that? Well, why? I'll get back to that in a second. But what it means is that anybody who wants a job can get it by simply going to a government office and ask for it. They also believe that there are no limits to government spending. Whether or not you tax people, you can borrow as much as you want and let government just floor the spending accelerator using debt to fund it. Essentially, that comes down to printing money. They base their theory on something called on this theory of central planning and these goals, on something called modern monetary theory. Now, this is a concoction out of an American university, a group of economists at a university here in the United States. I'm not going into the details of that. But what they're saying here is that, first of all, we need to be able to spend unlimited amounts of money. Government should and can do that. And secondly, We can solve the unemployment problem by giving everybody a job in governments. Now, of course, this has been tried before. Both of these things have been tried before. It was called the Soviet Empire. It lasted for 70 years. But why is the UN advocating precisely these two issues? Why do they want a job guarantee, and why do they think that government should just borrow and floor the spending accelerator? Well, the reason is that they, again, think that it's government's role to manage the economy. The idea behind central economic planning is that government will provide for all our needs, large and small. That is literally what central economic planning is about. Government will create a spending program for healthcare. Government will create a spending program for all your education needs from kindergarten through university, grad school. Government will create a spending program to always preserve your economic security. You will always have enough money to buy food, clothes. Government will create a housing program so that you will always have somewhere to live. Government will provide for every single aspect of your life. You have a right to that under socialism, under central economic planning. And that sounds great, doesn't it? There's just one problem. You don't have to do anything to get this. You don't have to do anything to get anything of this from government. All you have to do is just sit and receive it because you have a right to. That's what socialism and central planning is all about. But how are all these resources going to be produced? If everybody gets what they want simply by existing, by virtue of calling the government and telling them, where can I pick up my free food? Well, of course, it won't be produced because nobody has any incentive to work, right? So what government has to do is create some sort of mandatory workforce participation program. That is what this universal job guarantee really is about. It is the door opener to a mandatory workforce participation program. In the Soviet Union, everybody had the right to everything. You didn't have to. There was no demand that you worked to get all the things that you needed. But they had a law against being unemployed. They had a law against being unemployed. In other words, it was illegal to be unemployed in the Soviet Union. So you had to go get somewhere where you were registered as employed. And then you had to participate in the production of that place, of course. You could build TV sets. You could drive a bus. You could be a furniture carpenter, whatever the government assigned to you, whatever the government trained you to do. You were not allowed, by law, to be unemployed. That is what it means to create the universal job guarantee in reality. And, of course, no socialist in America would call it that right now, but that is exactly what happens. Because central economic planning is a system to take all the resources that are reproduced in society and dispense them to people according to what government thinks you need. You won't have a say what shirt you buy or get, pick up at your clothes dispensary. You won't have a say in that. You won't have a say in what food you eat. Government will tell you, and you will come and get whatever government gives you. But you can go get it. There's nothing that says you can't get it because you're not working. That is the point with socialism and central planning. But the flip side of that coin is that once you accept the system, you also accept that government needs to have all those resources produced. There won't be a shirt there unless somebody will sit at the sewing machine and produce it. There won't be food unless somebody grows it, harvests, processes it in a food production factory. There won't be anything in the stores where you can go pick up your food unless somebody drives the truck. But if everybody gets the right to all this stuff, without any job requirement, without any requirement of them participating, if there is no correlation between your economic input and what you can take out of the system, then there is also no guarantee that anything is going to be produced unless government forces you. And that is the nasty little truth in socialism and central planning that they don't tell you about. But when the United Nations now, in their report called Governance of Economic Transition, in the report that they put out on August 14, where they want to design a path to a centrally planned global economy, in this report, when they in that report say they want a universal job guarantee, what they're really saying is, we're now going to create the infrastructure for a mandatory workforce participation program, because in central economic planning, nobody has any incentive to go out and work unless we force them to. And why do they then want unlimited government spending? Why do they want to floor the spending accelerator, borrow as much money, print as much money as possible to fund unlimited government spending? Well, of course, that's what you need in socialism. If government is going to provide everything under the sun to cater to every single one of your needs, from your iPhone — you won't get an iPhone under socialism, but let's keep that myth alive for a moment — your iPhone, to your shoes, to your transportation needs, to decaf cappuccino down at Starbucks, all of those needs will be provided for by government. And how is government going to be able to do that? Well, of course, they're going to need all the money they can get, all the spending they can get their hands on. How do they fund that? By printing money. And this theory, modern monetary theory, has been designed to detach government spending from any constraints such as tax revenue or credit risk. I mean, a government that borrows too much money runs into credit problems. We saw more than enough of that in Europe back right after when the Great Recession started a decade ago. But the modern monetary theory has been designed to do away with all those problems. Of course, it's a nice theory, but it is never going to work. Print unlimited levels of money printing, unlimited levels of government debt, that has never worked in the history of the industrialized society. In the history of modern government, it has never worked, and it never will work, because of reasons that I don't have time to go into now. We're going to use another show for that. But go out and read the report that I referred to, Governance of Economic Transition. Learn what the United Nations is saying about the next phase of central economic planning, about bringing socialism to the all over the world at the same time. And when you've done that, think about what this will mean, even if we implement it in just one country. Because it is by no means certain that this is going to stop just as an idea from the UN. Believe me, it is going to be advanced here in America. It is already being advanced in the form of quote-unquote democratic socialism. Have you ever thought of why socialists, by the way, always have to put the word democratic in front of it? Have you ever heard about anyone saying democratic conservatism or democratic liberalism, democratic libertarianism? No, you don't need that, because libertarianism, conservatism are democratic ideologies inherently. Socialism is not. That's why socialists have to use the term democratic before they say socialist, so that they can somehow deceive us into believing that socialism can be democratic. It can never be democratic. And this is a theme that we're going to have to return to, of course. 30 minutes is a very short time for a discussion about these big issues. But take away from this show that there is a concerted effort to advance quote-unquote democratic socialism with all its atrocities, to put them back at the top of the political agenda. We cannot have that happen. Thank you for listening. We're going to be back Thursday next week, same time, same spot. See you then.